Erev Tov, Baruch Haba. We happen to be in a place that people have been dreaming for over a millennium to be in. And when the Ramban, when Nachmanides made Aliyah, so the Ramban did not have a minyan in Yerushalayim. And there's, he was here without a minyan. And there was a famous writer, famous Rishon, called Rabbi Oshtori HaParchi. He wrote a book, Kaftor V'Ferach, which delineates the borders of Israel and many of the laws of Trumot, Masrot, tithing the food. He traveled to Israel, and he records that when he got here, he found that the only shul that existed, they didn't know how to run a shul. So he said, after spending one shachris there and seeing that they did everything wrong, he walked out. He said, I can't be a member of a shul that does everything backwards. He said, they don't do anything. They didn't have Talmidei Chachamim here. Jerusalem was desolate. They didn't have anything. So we're coming here, and we're working on these streets. Rav Listman always says, Baruch Hashem, there's traffic. Right? Whenever you get a ride with Rav Listman, he says, Eretz Yisrael, look at how we're developing. We have Baruch Hashem traffic here. It's pretty amazing. So we're standing here, and it's hard for us to remember how special being here is. I think that's one of the major advantages that we, Olim Chadashim, have over Israelis. Because most people had to endure certain hardships to get here. Now, there's something which we sometimes forget, and that is that the essence of Eretz Yisrael is the Beit HaMikdash. Meaning, we whenever we build something, we build from the ground up, right? You lay foundations, and then you build something on top of it, then you build something on top of it. But God, the Ribbono Shel Olam, does not work that way. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't have to build from the ground up. Hashem builds from the top down. So when Hashem created earth, He started with the holiest place, right? Right there, under that dome, there's a big rock, and that rock over there, I don't know if the whole rock or part of it, or under it, but there is a point there which was the starting point of creation, which is the holiest place on earth.
Tell them to name the rock. Evan.
Evan, ha? Shtia. Shtia.
Not from the word from drinking, shtia.
Stuya.
No, shtia.
The Navi says, "Hashatot Yarishul soon." Shatot is a foundation. Shat is to place. So we are taught that creation began there. That's where Earth was created from, and everything else evolved from that. Now that has ramifications. Our international dateline is different than the Greenwich Mean Time international dateline. Because we say creation started there. When you want to look at the zero mark on a globe, we say the zero mark runs through Jerusalem. That's our zero mark, not Greenwich. So when we have to calculate our time zones, we start from there. But this leads us to another important concept that we're going to discuss tonight, the importance of man, our importance. But there is this concept that place up there, the Holy of Holies, is holy irrespective of us. Hashem created it holy from the beginning. And it's holy, and all of Israel gets its holiness from there. And just like if a person gets married and his wife says, not sure if I want to make Aliyah, so then we assume that, of course you want to make Aliyah. When we got married, that was understood. And she'll say, but we never spoke about it. And we say, yeah, but it's intrinsic to every Jewish home. It's the assumption that every Jewish home wants to make Aliyah. But we didn't talk about it when we were dating, right? But that's the assumption. You know, the halacha says the same thing about Yerushalayim. That if you didn't talk about living in Yerushalayim, if you get up one morning or your wife gets up one morning and says, I want to move to Yerushalayim. And the other party says,
It's
too expensive. It's too small. I like living in the open area of Givat Asaf. I'm going to live in Yerushalayim. You know what? For the price you pay in Givat Asaf for a full house, you could maybe get a room here in the old city. Maybe. I'm not sure you can even get that. We have good friends who live here, and they pay a fortune for a little place. You see all these arches in their house. That's their house, like this little arch. You crawl in. It's pretty amazing, and they pay a fortune for a little nothing by nothing. So why? Because it's assumed that every Jew is connected here. And part of what we should always try to do when we come to the Kotel is uncover that connection. To my mind, the idea that they call us Zionists is very telling, because in ancient times they called us Yehudim, which meant monotheists. Today they call us Zionists, right? Everyone calls us Zionists. So they view us as being connected to Zion. They view us as being connected to the Temple Mount. They view us as being connected to the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And they're right. We just sometimes have to remind ourselves that. So that's from the element of the holiness of the place. Chazal tells all blessing comes to earth through there. All prophecy comes through there. Even Chazal say there are veins that run through the earth, and they all run from there. And that's why different countries can grow different things. And in Israel, they've discovered that they can grow everything. How come? Because the central artery from which all the veins come out is in Israel. They said that you can't grow lychees in the Middle East. We grow lychees. They said you couldn't grow Jamaican bananas in the Middle East. And they succeed in growing Jamaican bananas here in Israel. There were many things which they thought you couldn't grow. And then they...
there are some of us that don't know what a Jamaican banana is, right?
There's this place called Jamaica, and there supposedly they grow the best bananas. Right. They say they're the best bananas. And they couldn't replicate it anywhere else but here. There are many things which they thought. Plantains, right? There are many things they thought they couldn't do. All blessing comes from there. It says whenever there's rain, it comes from there. But I want to shift to a story. Where we are, the Bet Midrash, okay. So the Bet Midrash we're in is part of an empire called Porat Yosef. Porat Yosef was the flagship yeshiva of Sephardi students. Chacham Ovadia Yosef learned here. Rav Mordechai Elio learned here. Probably every big name that you can think of as far as big rabbis in the last century from the Sephardi world learned here. This was... I don't know. No, no, that was his shul in Egypt. This is so he learned here. Rav Mordechai Elio, I came as a translator to his house, and he told us the following story. He was learning in Porat Yosef, and a big Rosh Yeshiva came in from the United States, a big Ashkenazi Rosh Yeshiva, and this came up because the person I was translating for, Rav Mordechai Elio, asked him, "Where did you learn?" So he didn't know any modern yeshiva. He said, "Where did your father learn?" So he told him his father learned by this Rosh Yeshiva. So he said, "I remember that Rosh Yeshiva. I was a teenager. And I was in Porat Yosef. And the Rosh Yeshiva came and gave a fiery speech. And we were all listening to his shir respectfully. And you had a whole base medrash of modest, humble, Sephardi, Bnei Torah. And the Rosh Yeshiva is standing there giving a fiery speech and no one says a word. And then the Rosh Yeshiva, after 35 minutes of speaking, said... What's wrong with you? Don't you guys learn anything? How come no one's interrupting me? And no one's arguing with me? And no one's asking on me? So the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Tzadka, I think it was, gave a sign to Rav Mordechai Elio and the other students, "Bechavod, now you guys can talk." Mm-hmm. And within 5 minutes he had to end his speech. They tore apart everything he said. Rav Mordechai Elio told us, he said, we were learning here, and we all had good questions on what he said. But we had the respect that we wouldn't say a word. All the students here sat quietly. And the second he started attacking us, "Why didn't none of you have to say anything? I thought this is a big yeshiva." So the Rosh Yeshiva said, "Okay, now you guys can." He signaled us we can. He said within 5 minutes, he couldn't continue his speech. He said we were able to quote him. The yeshiva here knew the Shas so well that they could quote him from all over, and it became dizzying to stand here. And he couldn't continue another sentence because they said, "Oh, but wait, Rabbi, what you said in the beginning, there's a Rashi in Zvachim." He told me that he refuted from the beginning from a Rashi out in Kodshim, in part of one of the tractates that people rarely get to. He said, okay. They were all modest. The beauty of the yeshiva is... The yeshiva produced people who were giants in Torah and tremendously humble, tremendously caring of Klal Yisrael. There wasn't only Rav Mordechai Elio and Chacham Ovadia. What was Chacham Ovadia's chavrusa? Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shul. So they asked Rav Ben Tzion. Now Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shul is a super genius also. Phenomenal, phenomenal mind. And they once asked him, "How come Chacham Ovadia got ahead of him? That he has so many books compared to Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shul." Even though Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shul wrote fantastic responsa. So he said they used to learn Chavrusa. Their Chavrusa, they'd be learning in the Beit Midrash, and then they'd have a Chavruta when they'd go for lunch. So he said the Chavruta went like this. One of us would read while the other one ate, and then the other one would read while the first one ate. So we never stopped learning. This was our chavruta between him. He said, but when Chacham Avadya would come to when would be his turn to eat, he'd take a slab of butter, put it on the bread, take three slices of bread, and then eat. He would not take the time to smear his butter on his bread. He said, I smeared my brother butter on my bread. And that's why he ended up where he ended up, and I ended up where I ended up. That's what Rav Nitzin Avashul said about the difference between himself and Chacham Avadya Yosef. People like to talk about Chacham Avadya Yosef being a super genius, and he was a tremendous mind. But we have to remember that he put in, till his last days, he put in almost a 20-hour day learning Torah from sunrise to sunset and beyond. He was learning and learning and learning. Part of his day, part of his daily regimen, he'd meet with scientists every day. He'd have a 45-minute, an hour meeting. Sometimes it was doctors, sometimes it was engineers, because there are new questions that come up. We have new refrigerators today. What's the halacha on a new refrigerator? How could he give a ruling? LED lights. What's the halacha on Shabbos? New light bulbs have come out, right? How do we view them on Shabbat? Are they a biblical prohibition, rabbinic prohibition? How do you deal in the hospital? How do you deal in the army? Every day he'd have a meeting with scientists. So that is ruling. We've discussed it already. In vitro fertilization, artificial insemination. If we clone an animal, is it kosher? Is it fleishik? Right? What's a cloned animal? You know, today they're talking about doing that. I told you guys.
Right. In the lab.
Right. They're saying to help the vegans. They want to grow meat in the lab. That way you didn't kill an animal in order to eat it. Is it fleishik? Can you eat it with milk? Can you have a cheeseburger? Okay, so all these questions have to be dealt with. So Chacham Avadya would have part of his day. He'd meet for an hour with scientists so that he'd know the questions that come up. I want us to shift to a few stories. Okay, so the stories we'll pick up with.
But notice, it's very interesting with the Rav, he's meriting us to be in this Beit Midrash. The Rav learns here. People love Yerushalayim so much that there's a building code in the city of Yerushalayim, and it's built with a certain stone that's called Eben Yerushalmi. Here, not only do they have Eben Yerushalmi on the outside, but they have Eben Yerushalmi as the walls here. This Yerushalayim stone is here. It's an amazing... amazing feat to have Eben Yerushalayim, to think of Yerushalayim all the time. I don't exactly understand why the architect made all these kishatot.
Said it's an empire. This is only one Bet Midrash. This is a small Bet Midrash in the empire. There's a Bet Midrash beneath us, which is just as big. There's a Bet Midrash to our left, which is just as big. There's up the steps and that away. Bet Midrash, which is bigger than this Bet Midrash, it's an empire. When I say an empire, they had maybe 1,000 students learning here. We had, in this Bet Midrash alone, we have 600, 700 students. Where's everybody?
Yeah.
So here, people have gone home for the weekend. This is married people.
It's so
they learn next to their home at nights. They don't stay here to learn. But the high school, the different ages are in the different Bet Midrash around here. So that's Porat Yosef. Right now, this place is being, the people who learn here are not Porat Yosef. They rent the building from them. There's a big Talmid Chacham called Rav Avigdor Nevenzel. And he has a goal to get at least 1,000 students learning right near the temple, near the Bet Mikdash. He says, if we can return Torah to this place, that's a major step in helping us bring back the redemption. We have to bring Torah close to the Beit HaMikdash. And so he set up this Beit HaMikdash with that goal alone. They asked him, where will you get funding from? He said, I don't know, but I got to get people back into here. And when he started his Kollel 2 years ago, you could come here at 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30, 9 o'clock. You look at the Arab shuk, you couldn't see an Arab. The whole shuk was filled with hats and jackets, people coming to learn. That's this Bet Midrash. I mean, that's their goal. They have this Bet Midrash. They have two up in the Rova itself, in the Jewish quarter. They have two more Bet Midrash there. That's
fantastic.
Yeah. So that's...
Okay, so